listening to On the Couch with Carly. Carly's couch is a safe space to talk. I'm a psychologist, but I'm not your pipe-smoking, tweed-wearing stereotype. Hello, and welcome back to On the Couch with Carly. Today I have Mr. Afro Daddy himself, Terrence Mentor, on the couch. I'm very excited. Let me quickly give you an intro and then we can get into it today, Terrence. So Terrence Mentor is a South African content creator, writer, and speaker celebrated for his engaging storytelling and relatable insights on modern parenting. Known online as Afro Daddy, and if you are watching on video, you'll see why he has that name. I'm taming my fro, as you can see, but
no competition today.
Yeah, it's all you, babe. He uses humor and authenticity to share his experiences as a father, exploring the joys and challenges of raising children in today's world. Terrence advocates for positive masculinity, diversity, and mental health awareness, connecting with audiences through podcasts, social media, and public speaking. Beyond his digital presence, he is a devoted family man, blending his passion for fatherhood with commitment for fostering
meaningful
conversations about family, community, and personal growth. Okay, yeah, but self-aggrandizing is also not bad. Isn't that fine that you are self-aggrandizing about being interested in these topics? You know, isn't that positive masculinity?
The therapy that I've been doing both by myself and with help is getting me to the point where I can say these things openly about myself. Like, yes, I'm having these good conversations. But ultimately, I think the point of that whole thing is that, like, I want people to be having better and more conversations about family and fatherhood in particular. And that's been kind of my drive for the last 10 years. I've been doing Afro Daddy for 10 years. It's way too long to do one thing.
No, it's amazing. I love that. Okay, so on that, we're going to just take from it what we heard, which is that you're experienced, you know what the hell you're talking about, you've been doing this a long time, and I would say that it is absolutely wonderful to be shouting these sort of things from the rooftops. We don't need people to be quietly trying to advocate for these things. We need you to be loud and proud. So thank you. So today, I'm so excited to have you on because I feel like you also now within such good company, because I've had such amazing fathers on my podcast and some of which haven't even come out yet at this time while we are talking, but will come by the time your episode airs, we would have had a few more. And so it's thrilling for me to be talking to fathers at this moment because obviously I have deep understanding from the motherhood perspective. I work a lot with women and talk a lot about motherhood, but I do think fatherhood is such important, vital part of modern motherhood and how we need to shift things so that it isn't how it's been and that there's this sort of new frontier around parenting and fathers play a significant role in that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, when it comes to motherhood in particular, if you want to advance the cause of motherhood, look at the fathers. Like, that is the biggest spot. If you put all our resources into working on improving how fatherhood happens in South Africa, the biggest winners from that will be the fathers. But the second biggest winners will be the mothers, because they're going to have a partner. They're going to have someone who is not just providing cash in the few times that actually happens, but someone who's emotionally present, physically present. So I really am banging the fatherhood drum quite loudly. I realized very early on that fatherhood is also a feminist issue, so in so many ways. So it really does align, I think. You know, I've heard the conversations you had with previous fathers, and that gets me so excited, because for a very long time, it felt like I was shouting into the void. You know, we're talking about shouting it loudly. I felt like I was talking to no one. And then you start to hear these conversations with other fathers, and they're saying, not from me, but their thinking is aligned with my thinking. And that's so exciting, because it means that change is happening. Maybe slowly, but change is happening.
Yeah. Well, I often speak about the fact that our parenting generation is really the first to be doing this. And you know, we're doing it how anyone does things when they first do it, clumsily, fumbling along the way, you know, but we're doing we're attempting egalitarian parenting more than any other generation of parenting has tried. You know, we are considering fathers and their role in, you know, the most intimate aspects of parenting as being as important as mothers. And I think that's, and we're the first generation to do that. We happen to also be doing it while the world falls apart around us.
And yes. And sometimes we have to do it to our parents. We have to then go both ways. So we're trying to be this totally. Emotional core for
totally.
Communities.
So, I mean, I think we're doing
general.
A lot, and it's not easy to shift these things. Think about how, like, just a generation ago, it wasn't even the norm that fathers would be in the operating room with them, or, you know, within the room with the mother giving birth. That even just that, this is very, very start of it. You know, we're shifting around that. That's just the norm now, that dads are there, that now dads are being called doulas. You know, we don't think about it, but that's a huge advancement in a short space of time.
Totally. And unfortunately, that still has to trickle down into all the parts of society. You know, this is part of the issue with my family, is that my wife is a motherhood activist. So the two of us are kind
Shout
of coming from different
Happy
directions.
Julie.
Shout out Julie Mentor. Check out Embrace. Should throw it out there. But, you know, a lot of the work that she's doing, she's still saying that there's a lot of spaces where fathers are still kept out of the hospital rooms. Because there's still some antiquated ideas around, you know, who is responsible for the child, what the father's role is. You know, it's like, you put the baby in there, now go away for like several years until the child is a teenager and you need to send him to like a more expensive school or whatever. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but I totally agree with you. I mean, just in my circle, the what is considered normal would completely fry the brains of even our parents, like one generation after us.
Yeah.
So very exciting.
I think it's really important to acknowledge that is beautiful, but it makes it really hard because you are creating something that has never, you're doing something that's never been done before. And therefore you are creating it as you go. And so you're in the unknown, and that is, you know, it's hard. It's beautiful and it's amazing. Yeah. And it requires so much from us, but it's not easy. It's challenging. It's challenging.
Massively so. I mean, even just thinking about, sorry, I'm just going to keep, this is going to be a long conversation because you and I can talk about this forever. But I was thinking about the idea of the dad being an emotional center for his children. Like, that's a very new concept. The idea that,
yeah,
the father should be as aware about, like, what is my child feeling, as opposed to, is he fed? Does he have everything he needs to go to school? Is he warm at night? Ticking those boxes and it's fine. Again, we're like the first generation of fathers that have to consider this whole other aspect of what it means to be a person. And the problem is that we haven't done it ourselves. So, like, how do you teach your child to be this, like, holistic, well-rounded individual who, you know, cares about people around them and is kind to himself or herself or themselves. But you've never done that for yourself. You've never taken the chance to really think about your own emotions, how you consider things. How do you feel comfortable? How do you feel safe? For a long time, when people ask, like, what is the number one thing we can do for fathers? I'm like, get them into therapy.
Yeah.
Get them into therapy. Even if they think they don't need therapy, they need to be in some sort of space where they can unpack these things.
Yeah, but you see, this is where I want you to be on my, like, committee, where we are masters of the universe and we work out how to package therapy to men so that it doesn't sound like therapy, but in actual fact, it is like, I don't know, like taking creatine is for your muscles. You know, like it's a
branding. Yeah, it's a branding issue. That's what therapy has. And you know, even with that, like, I had to go to therapy for years, but only because I hit rock bottom. So there's nothing like special about Terrence. It's like, it got so bad, I had no other choice. And that shouldn't be the case for most people.
It really shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But okay, we jumped ahead to, like, how are we going to, like, build our children's emotional world? Let's just go right back to the beginning. Like, if you think about, if you just sort of create like a sort of how-to guide for dads, like, where does the stuff begin? Where do we begin with like where fathers' roles come in, where the sort of culture has given us space for fathers to play a role, and where we as new modern parents have to carve out kind of additional space for the dads and to play a role from the very beginning? Where do you think that starts?
So I think it really does start before you've had a child, before you become a father. I think the first place most dads need to, or men need to think about fatherhood is about how they were fathered. They really need to get that under, they really have to understand the positives, the negatives, look at their fathers maybe in a non-emotional lens, maybe take the child lens away and just look at your father as a person to see what his struggles were, to kind of understand him better. I think that really helps that when you become a dad, you have that kind of sorted. You're not now having to juggle that process. I think the other things we need is the gatekeepers of children. And these aren't just moms. These are family members. These are hospital staff. These are the schools. They need to have a process and policies in place where the father is always included. And it's silly things like who gets called, who does the school call when the child is sick? Who, like, do they always call the mom? Well, maybe they should call the dad a few times. Who is, when the child is born and you're at the hospital, do the nursing staff know to make space for the father, that they're not pushing him out the way? Do they make sure that he's included in the first nappy change? When they're talking about any medications that the mom and the child need, is the dad there involved? So I think that would be the next thing for me, is that the gatekeepers to the children and to the children's lives need to be like,
yeah,
fathers are 100% there. And then the third aspect we need would be for the current crop of dads to be talking about their experiences. I think this is where moms have been getting it right for so long. They're like, the moment there was an opportunity to make a moms group online, moms are making that group and they're sharing their experiences, the good, the bad, and the ugly. They're sharing advice. They're sharing tips. I mean, I can honestly tell you that the first active fathers group that I've joined with that kind of vibe was last week. Literally last week was the first time. I know. And I would have thought that I would be the first, but I've tried to start these groups. They failed. The first really active one was last week. So fathers need to be talking more in whatever spaces they can, talk about their experiences to other dads and to potential future dads.
Yeah. You know,
I've dumped so much in you.
Great. You're good. I'm loving this. You've apologized three times, Terrence. Don't apologize.
I'm working on that. That's another thing I'm working on.
I'm with such unapologetic hair. Be so apologetic.
That's the thing. This is the hair does.
Let your hair teach you.
Right. Yeah. I need to have my hair's personality.
That's, I know. I always say that about my hair. I'm always like, my hair is like my whole personality. Like, people just assume I'm this, like, but I actually am quite similar to my hair. But anyway, okay. What I wanted to say was what you pointed out is, which I think is really interesting, is that you're talking about how there is this assumption that, and I think this is so interesting because it starts really from conception, that like, because pregnancy happens in a woman's body, it is a woman's problem, and the systems and the things that are around that are around her and her body. And there's no one saying, right, dad, it might not be happening in your body, but you are included in this process and you are significant in this process. There's no gynae that's saying, right, mum and dad, when are you coming to your next appointment? They just speak to their client, who's the woman, the female, or, I mean, not in all cases, but obviously the heteronormative case. But you know, the pregnancy or the process before you think about having a child, that the father would be included in that. And I don't know if you were this kind of father, and maybe you can speak to this, but what do you do when the father is a bit avoidant of that? So I know that, you know, to be a mother who is pregnant, and you're like reading all the baby books, and then you're like, here, read this book, and dad's like, I don't want to read that bullshit, you know, and you get that resistance. So what is that? And how do we tackle that? And how do we bring dads into this?
So the first way seems really silly, but invite the dad to the baby shower. that is something that I'm still shocked by, that most baby showers is like just for the mom. And it's a very quiet way of us saying the mom is the only person who's having a baby, which is not true. She's the one physically carrying, like you said, but the partner is there and should be there and celebrated in the same way. Even if you want to have, I understand that that baby shower space is like a sacred space for women. I understand that. So make sure that someone throws the father his own version. I had a nappy braai.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of friends over. We had some beers. We had some drinks. It was a little bit of a, and you know, I did this for the, our third son that we had just under 2 years ago now. And that was fantastic. Like it made me feel like, oh, cool. I've got a community around me and I'm important.
Yes.
That was important. And then the second thing is there's a real need, there's a physical need for the moms to do as much research as possible because it's their body and they're about to go through some crazy stuff. So there's obviously a clear desire to do that research. Sometimes when we come to their fathers with all of that research and all of that burden of knowledge already, as in, I wanted to do this way and we're throwing it this like this and we're just talking at them. That's not a very inclusive way of talking. It does require, and it sounds like a lot of handholding, but you got to understand that men are starting from the like way back foot on this.
Yeah.
So a little bit of sympathy is required, but including him in the conversations, and again, the conversations about major decisions. Mm. Are we breastfeeding? Are we going to do a natural birth? Are we going to do a C-section? Do we want to do a home birth? All of these kind of, what color should the walls of the baby's room be? Or what crib should we get? Some of those decisions should be included in that, not in a way that completely overwhelms him either. And this is where that sympathy and handholding comes into play. But it is, the space already feels so exclusionary for men. Right. It's not our bodies.
Okay.
And spaces are not designed for us.
I hear you. And I'm going to play devil's advocate. So I take it you were the kind of man that if you asked to participate in nursery design or in whether we're going to breastfeed or not, you would be an active and engaged participant, right? I'm assuming that.
Yeah.
Do you have friends or do you know people who weren't so interested in that role and were instead quite, I don't know, freaked out or even annoyed that having to be involved in such discussions, you know?
Yes. And that is 100% true. I think part of my issue is that I will, because I'm a father advocate, is what I think of myself as, I'm always going to assume the best out of every father until proven otherwise. And maybe that's a little bit of a naive way of looking at the world, but I have to have that. Otherwise, I feel all hope is lost. So I have to ask myself, why is that man responding like that?
Yes.
This is such an important, like such a huge, important part of his life. You know, I guess we see this sometimes with weddings too, where like the groom is like, oh, you make all the decisions. I'll just rock up on the day and say, I do.
Yeah.
And that blows my mind too. Like, this is one of the most biggest days of your life. How can you not? I'm not saying you have to make every decision and be as involved, but at least do some research about, you know, locations. Yeah. So that was my feeling with definitely our third child was, you know, what podcast should I be listening to? What are decisions that we're not certain about and how can I be more, you know, involved? What can I expect on the day so that I'm ready? That is the kind of person I am. I'm quite a curious person in both ways. You can ask that, you can say that. But I do like to ask questions. I do like to figure out why things are the way they are. So why do we use this gas as opposed to that gas? How is this going to make you feel? Is there an easier way of doing this? How do we avoid a negative experience? So that is kind of where my brain naturally is. But anyway, I do have to ask myself, what is going on with that man that he is uninterested in this big, big issue in his life? Yeah. Does he feel capable of making these decisions? And if he doesn't feel capable, how can we make him feel capable?
Right.
Does he maybe feel like his role isn't that important? And in that case, how do we make him realize that his role is important? These are the kind of questions I ask, assuming that he's not a complete a-hole, you know, and assuming that he would like to be more involved, what's stopping him from doing that?
Yeah. So I think that that's absolutely correct. A weird thing, actually, because it's kind of like an empowerment thing that needs to happen, because I do think there are just assholes. negligent.
Yeah. No, sure.
Negligent.
No, of course.
Incompetent fools out there.
Yeah.
But I do
willingly
think
incompetent.
That you do,
yes.
I do think that you're right, and that probably for the most part, this person does actually care. Does actually, if you had to really get to it, they do care about the child. They care about their partner. They care about being a father. They care about all of those things. They just either feel like overwhelmed and underprepared and like they aren't competent enough, or they don't have enough information, or they feel, you know, I think the scripts, the cultural scripts are like, your job as a man, your masculinity is, you know, this is the route through which you get that. You go job, financial, the end, right? Like like I will prove that I'm a man by providing a home and making money. And if all I do is lose myself in my career and my work and be the best that I can be in that, that's enough, because that's what I've been told is enough as a man. And this other thing over here is not where I feel good enough. It's not where I feel like, it's not where I want to flex, right? Like I don't flex there, because that's not the place where I have been told I derive masculinity and status and power from. So how do we translate this to these men who do care about this, who do value this, but just don't know how to show up in a way that actually feels that they are empowered in that role?
So I think firstly, just to say, I can hear all the mothers and all the women who have had bad experiences with either their own father or with the father of their children going, ah, shame, because the mothers are the ones that are left to deal with the consequences of, whether it's because they're just terrible people or they're not capable. So I do want to make it very clear that this isn't like men have it so tough and women should like take it easy on them. But if you are in a space where you want to find solutions, this is where these conversations are so important. So this isn't something that I think moms necessarily need to be dealing with themselves. But to really answer your question, how do we get these guys who are, I think, the majority of like lost fathers, the fathers who are capable of A, doing it, and B, talking about it, should be doing it and talking about it. So literally my goal with Afro Daddy, when I first started, was if I can make one father feel less alone and more empowered, then Afro Daddy would be all worth it. And it took 5 years for a dad to come up to me and say that to me. And I'm like, finally, I've achieved the ultimate achievement for Afro Daddy. I should have stopped at that high. But I think firstly, other fathers should be talking about it. Older fathers. And that's another aspect that where the new crop of dads struggle, because we forget that they were also fathered badly, right? They don't have the examples of all the things that we're talking about. They've never seen it before. They've seen men be tough and work hard and work, you know, 18-hour days to provide for their family. That's what they've seen. That's what they know. That's what they can replicate. So we have to start talking about different stories of what masculinity and fatherhood looks like. The other thing is we need more. When I say stories, like we need more media about just good fathers. When was the last time you watched a show where like the main character was just a dad being a good dad? I can think of maybe like one or two. And so we need a lot more of those examples too, just to kind of go, A, these people exist, and B, you can be like that. Look, this is what you can do. This is how you do it. It's part of your masculinity. It's part of your experience, your identity as a man.
Yeah. Have you come into contact with any educational material or, I don't know, podcasters or, I don't know, just like leaders who give a kind of, I don't know, dads for dummies manual? Like, you know, like,
this is something I want to write one day.
Like a matrescence, the ChatGPT summary version of that, like for men.
I haven't. And I think so firstly, there's a thing called the State of South Africa's Fathers, which is a academic report, but it's filled with use cases and stories, and it's a very easy read. I mean, I've read it, so it can't be that hard, but it's filled with, firstly, good reporting on the current reality of fatherhood and the current struggles that fathers face, and then also filled with examples of fathers and men who have kind of overcome that and how they've done it, as well as what groups are doing at the moment. So I'd say the state of the father report.
Okay.
There's also an organization called Heartlines that have created some fatherhood related media, which is also really good, like for a range of demographics and different segments, which I was quite proud to be in that, like when they had a weekend session kind of conceptualizing the movies that they were making, I was part of that conversation, which is so exciting. So those are the two spaces that I would definitely think of.
Okay.
The problem, I think, really is that it's not so much even that it's, okay, these are the things you need to do to be a good father. This is how you change a nap. It's not the practical stuff that we're missing, because those exist. I think what's missing is really the why of it all.
Yes.
The why would any man want to do this?
Yes. Okay, that's interesting. Tell me more. Yeah.
Because you know, when we talk about, when I see stories of men who have absconded from their responsibilities as a father, whether it's like literally they've disappeared or they're still in the home, but they're just not there emotionally or psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
I feel obviously upset by that, but I also feel really sad for those guys,
mm-hmm.
because I've been so fulfilled by my experience of being a father. Like that's what keeps me going when there's sleepless nights and when I don't have any money and I see my childless friends going on another holiday overseas that I can never afford to go on because my three kids like to eat everything. You know, just the fact that the actual experience of being a father is so fulfilling. And I'm like, there are people who have the opportunity to have the same experience and are completely missing out on it. Sometimes not by their own choice. Sometimes the situation makes it hard for them to do that. Sometimes by their own choice. And sometimes they just don't know that the experience is worthwhile. So I think a lot more, you know, and I think, again, this isn't a bad comparison with moms, but there is a kind of language about the wonderful joy of motherhood in that it maybe has to be counterbalanced in the other direction, that there's a reality to motherhood that's not so joyful. But I think we need that for men, where we just talk about how joyful it is to come home and have a 18-month-old run into your arms shouting dada.
Mm-hmm.
Like how that there's nothing better than that. Like there's nothing better that you'll ever experience in your life,
yeah,
than that thing that I can, I mean, I'm in my home office right now. If I walk out my door, there's an 18-month-old waiting to like give me a hug. Now, that is beyond anything I could experience. The idea of having my almost teenagers like do something that I've been trying to help them to do, or like seeing them be kind people and be like, I taught them how to do that. That was me. Like, you know, there's all of these joyful moments. And yes, it's super hard, but like things that are worthwhile are always hard doing. And yeah. So I really think that's the kind of space, that's the kind of language that I want to, again, I've always tried to do with Afro Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed in with a little bit of the reality, because no one wants to see someone constantly talk about the good parts. But we so rarely talk about how great fatherhood is. Like it's not something we see often. And I just wish more dads, again, were talking about to their sons. Like there's a man right now who has a son who's about to have his first child. And I want that man, who, however old he is, in his 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever, to be like telling his son how great fatherhood is.
Mm-hmm.
And like pushing that narrative. So, yeah.
I love that. It reminds me of, there was a podcast I listened to with the woman who wrote the book about the mental load. I'm trying to think what it's called, like invisible labor or something like that. Anyway, Fair Play. I can't remember which one it was. Anyway, and they're referring to how, you know, there's this unequal distribution of labor that, you know, we all know about now, about invisible labor and moms taking it on, and how dad's sort of, you know, the sort of stereotype of dad going to work and he comes home and it's like everything's kind of been done, and, you know, the school doesn't ever call him to come home when the kid's sick, and, you know, he's probably never gone to a doctor in the middle of the day, and he's probably never, you know, fetched a kid at 2 p.m. from school or whatever, various practical things that has kept him. But in addition to that, he's never worried in the same way that the mom worries, or he's never been, like you said in the right at the beginning, that emotional support for that child in the way that mom is. And that we position this as like a division of labor thing, like, oh, you know, shame, moms have to do this hard slog of motherhood, and that's a real disadvantage because, you know, they, you know, it's all on them. But what the outcome of that is, and it was so clearly described by this one person on the podcast, who was like, you know, my parents got divorced, and after my parents got divorced, my mother's house was what we referred to as home, and mm-hmm. my dad's house was what we called dad's house. And yeah. that in itself is such a clear illustration of what happens, that there's the consequences of this unequal distribution of labor, which sounds like something I don't want to get more of. Thanks. I don't want more of this invisible, unpaid labor, but that's underselling it in a way, because that's what it feels like to mom. And yes, mom needs less of it. But what we really want to do is promote it for dad, that this is the work that goes into you having the relationship with your child that lasts a lifetime and is meaningful and provides you and your child with something that is so, so important and beautiful and irreplaceable. You can't replace it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that idea of investing in the future is a really good way of talking about it. But even the actual work itself is a privilege.
Yes.
You know, and too much of a good thing is a bad thing. So I think for the moms who are under the heavy load of the invisible labor and the mental load, you know, they're probably asking us to shut up right now because they can't see the privilege of it. But you are completely right. Like I there are moments when I'm holding my son at 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm just blown away that I get to do that and that I get this privilege. Mm-hmm. And then you start to see that snowball into the fact that I have a son who's very happy to come to me and sometimes not come to mom, which is insane, you know? And I guess that's probably why we have so much media that talks about how amazing moms are. They're written by the children who were their moms were their safe space. Mm. Their moms were the people they go to, you know, Queen doesn't shout, Papa, I killed a man. It's Mama, I killed a man, because Mama is the person that you go to for consolation and safety and solace. And I would hate that. I think partly, you know, you've already said how many times I've said sorry. Like my imposter syndrome mm-hmm. maybe makes me work a little bit harder as a father, because I'm like, I want to deserve that moment when my kids are my age or in their 30s or however, and they want to come home.
Yeah.
You know, they're outside. They want to come home on a Sunday and have Sunday dinner. They want to call me and say, hey, dad, I've got this issue. Can you help me? Because I'm like, yes, I know that dad's my guy. So again, these are not the ways we speak about fatherhood, right? We talk about the labor that we want dads to take up. We use that word labor. You know, like it's not good. It's not, the language is so negative. And yet my experience of it, even in the hard parts, there's so much joy in that. You know, would I, if I had 20 times my salary, would I get more help in the house? Yes, I would. I would shepherd out some of that labor. But still, even just the privilege of having children to worry about is mind blowing. Mm. And we just need to talk about it more positively. We just need dads to know that that being a dad is great. Like, honestly, I was thinking about it the other day where I'm not sure what I'm talented at, but I can tell you for certain, I'm a good dad.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of that fact. I'm not going to apologize for that. You could, like, that's something that was in my bio. I'd be like, yes, say it louder. I'm a good dad, you know? And it's the one thing in my life that, like, I'm unabashedly proud of. And it blows my mind that there aren't dads who are like jumping at the opportunity to feel the way that I feel.
Yeah, it's so interesting what you say about privilege. I mean, it's like, honestly, you know, everything I think about parenting is like also just paradox. You know, like there's so much paradox in this experience. And, you know, I remember being a very, very new mom with my first baby and being at a family event and having to go breastfeed in like a separate room because my baby needed like quiet for breastfeeding, not because I was not trying to breastfeed in public. So I was like in this room and I had left my phone somewhere. And I didn't have my phone to entertain myself with, which is such a weird thing that we do now. I mean, our previous generation of mothers didn't have phones to entertain themselves with while they breastfed. They actually just stayed and were in the moment with their babies. Gasp. you know? But anyway, so I had this moment where I went through this whole thing of like, oh, I'm so like bored. I'm in this room. I'm away from everyone. Like, where's everyone? You know, they're all having their fun downstairs. I could hear the noises and I was alone in this room with my baby, just on my own, feeling very sorry for myself. And then this, in like a split second after that, I had this like slap myself on the face moment where I was like, oh my God, are you joking? Like, look at this beautiful, precious baby drinking your milk. In like, this is probably something you've dreamed about your whole life, wanting this relationship. This is a goddamn privilege. There is no one else in the world who has this relationship with this child in this way.
Yeah.
And it is such a mindfuck, actually, because it is both. It is, you are losing out on so much and you do feel so much, I don't know, like kind of loss and frustration and whatever as an individual. And then you also have this like such enormous feeling of gratitude and privilege. But it's so interesting what you say about the privilege of fatherhood, because what is privilege? Privilege is something that is granted to you without you asking for it, without you doing anything to deserve it, right?
Yeah. 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 So it's weird to say, to talk about labor as a privilege.
Well, I think what's in my brain right now is just this feeling about something I've come to terms with around fatherhood and what the difference is between being a father and a mother and how it gets set up this way from pregnancy, from birth, when you breastfeed and like obviously our culture has like entrenched these things because there's 4 months of maternity leave, but only 2 weeks or 10 days of maternity leave, you know, in our country. It's just this thing of like, what is the privilege of fatherhood? Because in a way, I sometimes create this narrative in my head that the privilege of fatherhood is they get to come and go as they please. They get to opt in or opt out if they want to. And that is actually their privilege. The male privilege is I get to do this thing and I get to choose how much I want in or how much I want out. And for me as a mother, that is a privilege I don't have. So, but 100%. I love the idea of using privilege as our word that we kind of anchor men into, that there is a privilege to staying. There's a privilege. So just talk me through what you're thinking when I say that.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, we live in a very, paternalistic society. And the everything has been set up to benefit men in general. So like you say, if we want to be good dads, we can be good dads. There's a couple of roadblocks to that, but there's no massive societal structures like in the way. There's no like laws in the way from really, if we were determined to be a good dad, to stop you from being a good dad. But I think the sad case is that because this has been something that's been set up by men, we've almost built our own cage in a way where there are things that I think we need to be pushed on. We need to be pushed in the space where actually you don't have a choice. You have to perform as a father in certain ways. You have to be in a space like almost like an arranged marriage where like once you're there, the Stockholm syndrome kicks in and you suddenly realize that you actually do love this person very much. I think that is something that is kind of in the space we're at now, where I think for a lot of men, being a dad is just scary. So if you're going to give them the opportunity to opt out in any way, at any level, they're going to take it because it's scary. And you keep using words like labor and you keep using words like the work we have to do. And you know, you keep talking about all of the money we're losing every conversation is about a different decision we have to make. And just when I get to grips with it, suddenly the kids at preschool and we have to figure that out, you know, again, and like, I keep coming back to the way we talk about it, the language we use. And that's why I think I really like what you're saying about taking that privilege word, which is largely negative, especially in the context where moms don't have it and dads do have it, and then switching it around and saying, but dads, you have the privilege to be the best possible dad you can be. And that is good for everyone else. Obviously, it's good for the child. We know it's good for the mom, but really it is good for you. And like, again, that's like there's a lot of conversations around why we need to be improving fatherhood in South Africa. Kids with good dads are less, are more likely to finish school, less likely to fall into drugs, less likely to fall into crime. Moms who have a active parenting partner are much more likely to further their education, much more likely to get better jobs just because they have the capacity to do it. So we can talk to the moon turns blue, turns cheese till the cows come home. We can talk about those things as much as we like, but we need to talk about why fatherhood is good for fathers.
Okay.
We need to talk about that more and more and more. And that is the change.
Okay. So sell it to me. Why should dad attend all the things antenatally? Why should dad be present for the pregnancy or for the preparation of before having a child? What is it? What is in it for dad? And then from the point of child coming home, what's in it for dad? Tell me about those experiences and those nuggets that dad's going to have to look forward to.
I think the way I would sell it to dads is that your relationship with your child is the only relationship that you will ever experience that you get to define. So if you want to have a healthy, wonderful, energetic, exciting relationship with your child, that's all on you. Like all you have to, not all you have to do, but there are things you can do to ensure that happens. And you like that, that should be the driving force, right? Like there are relationships that are not great in your life. We need people in our lives that we are connected with. And this is a relationship that you're like, I have control here and I can make sure that this relationship is a good one. So I think that would be like my main selling point. The way you make sure that you have a good relationship starts before the baby's born, right? It starts, you want to be able to tell that child, before you were born, I was looking after you. Before you were born, I was getting my own head straight. I was reading up about how to care for you. When you were born, I can tell my children, I changed your first nappy, right? That was me. So when you cried, I was there. When you were a little bit older and you were scared, I was there. And when your child is 25 and you have a great relationship with them, you can look back and go, I can feel proud of all of what I've done. So being able to have a good relationship, being able to feel proud of yourself, that is the biggest things that you can tell a father that he will gain from being an active dad.
I love that. I really love that. Now, because reality is what reality is, we know that there are challenges, things that, you know, are barriers to entry on that front. And, you know, I've spoken before about maternal gatekeeping. Now, I know the typical picture, which is, dad may have done the first nappy, but ultimately what happens is moms get more time on the pitch, right? Because of paternity leave issues, because of our gendered society and how we split up roles, because of a number of different reasons. What I have heard repeatedly is that one of the biggest barriers for dads is that they get criticized, that they don't do things properly, and that they are a bit gun shy of going towards things that they could do, but they don't because mom does it better, or mom will be, you know, telling them what to do from the sidelines. And they don't like, I don't know if you've noticed this, but men don't like taking criticism, especially from women.
How dare you say that to me?
Touche. So yeah. So just tell me about that from a man's perspective. What is that feeling like when you are trying to do something you don't, you know?
Yeah. Let me give you an example from the other direction, the better direction, which I'm going to praise my wife a bit here. We, especially with this third child, our mantra every single day, we would come to work together and at some point we would say, same team, you and I on the same team, right? And that is what the fathers need. It's not that we don't want to take criticism, or we don't think we can improve, or we can't do things better. We just want to feel like you're in our corner, that you're not there saying, shame on you for doing this badly. It's, hey, good on you for trying. Let's see how we could do it better. How can I make your life easier here? So really having someone who's like a cheerleader of my fatherhood, who doesn't criticize me in front of my boys, even if she disagrees with the way I'm parenting, has been massively important, who values my thoughts on decisions, who those kinds of things are really important. And yes, the criticism is not great. it really does. And maybe mothers don't realize this because they're in their own, their own postpartum space as well. But it doesn't take a lot of criticism to completely tell a father, I'm not even going to touch this anymore.
Yeah.
It could literally be one time. It can literally be that he was doing it. We are fragile creatures, and especially in this space.
Well, I think fatherhood is fragile. I think that growing fatherhood is like growing a little embryo right now, because we are far from a robust sense of what fathers do from the beginning. Can you hear me? It looks like you're frozen.
Yes. Okay. No, I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's again, there's so few examples around of what this looks like, how to do it properly, how to take criticism well, how to realize that your partner or your wife is in, like I was saying, she's in her own dark space. So if she does snap at you a little bit, it actually has nothing to do with you. It's that she's like struggling with a myriad of physical and other emotions.
Well, exactly.
So to even know that, to go, okay, she snapped at me because I didn't wrap the nappy up in the right bin, in the right bag, actually has nothing to do with me. That does require that father to have seen that in other spaces, to have heard about it, spoken about it with other men, to have watched a show where that was the outcome. You know, there's so many, I mean, when you and I are about the same age, I think, maybe I'm a bit older, just from the gray hair in my beard. But the shows we grew up at always had like the naggy wife, the naggy housewife who knew how to do everything, and the like idiotic dad who didn't know where the scissors was or didn't know how to look after his own kids. And I just wish we had shows where it's like the dad tries to do something, the mother criticizes it, the dad like tells his kids, your mom's not feeling great right now, so let's just let things like calm down. Just a little bit of emotional intelligence about the situation, you know? Anyway, I that's a pipe dream that might not happen, but we definitely need to have men talking about this more, about how not just they felt being criticized, but also about the situation that their wives are in or their partners are in, and seeing that in that context.
But doesn't this also just come back to what we were speaking about in the beginning, which is that this is the first parenting generation to do that. I'm not sure if us as a species have ever done it. You know, so what are we talking here? What are we talking? We're talking thousands and thousands of years, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, depending on what your beliefs are, where we've not, you know, so what does that mean actually? It means that we need to really be thinking about this being a new skill, a new role, and a role that, like any of your other roles, you took time to learn and adapt to. And it's like, for me, it's that. It's the fragility of it. It's that we expect dads to sort of intuitively know what to do, but then we also have dads who get a little bit of friction, get a little bit of feedback, and go like, well, fine. Because the problem with this is that they've always got mother to defer to. Not always. I know they're same-sex couples, blah, 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 but I'm talking about the heteronormative. And that's, for me, also part of the, it's almost like the only times I've seen fathers really, really show up, other than, of course, you and the other unicorns, but is when moms are incapacitated. So I've seen it when moms have got illnesses, when moms have got injuries, when moms have, you know.
And they're forced to step up.
And dads are forced to. And then they don't have a choice. And they don't have the almost the sort of luxury of being like, oh, I got criticized, so I just stepped back, you know? You know what I'm saying?
And then it's almost too late because, you almost don't want to have to learn on the job at that point. But I 100% hear what you say. And I love that idea of the embryo that's so fragile. Such a good way of explaining it, because if we think of fathered in general as like a new, as a child, when that child learns to do something that's really basic, what do? We cheer, right? We go crazy for that child saying its first word or taking its first step. And that is such a great perspective that we should have on the concept of fatherhood, and I guess the present and emotionally available fatherhood that we're trying to promote now. That I really do like that idea. It also means then that everyone is on the same page on again, cheering things that because this is what happens, right? When a dad does something that dads normally don't do, he cooks, he makes supper for his kids for the whatever. And someone says, oh, well done. Look at this great dad doing this thing that most dads don't do. The first comment is, oh, but moms have been doing this for generations. And I get it. It's a fair comment. I understand the frustration that leads to that comment, right? Because it's like, how can we be praising something that another group of people have had to have done for so many generations? But if we look at it through the lens that you're talking about, you're then taking that other angle, which is so great, which is like, he's made a step in the right direction. Is it perfect? Mm-hmm. Is it where we want to be? No, but oh my word, good on you for going there, you know?
Well, I think a couple of things have to happen alongside it in order for it to be fair, which is number one, we need to take pressure off of moms to be so perfect and take, you know, so that dads can take up space more and be imperfect alongside moms. Because I think that that feeling of like, oh, great, dad's brought home takeout for dinner and he's getting celebrated. But if mom brings home takeout, she's just a lazy ass, you know, whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I do think that it's important that we do this for men in this situation where we absolutely praise and reinforce these moments. So long as what we're doing as well is making space for women to tap out a bit, to, you know, like we've got to have both. It's almost got to be that balance. And then the other thing I want to say is that I don't think it should be on moms to be the cheerleaders.
Interesting.
I think that that's what's unfair is that in addition to holding it all down, which we are doing as mothers, for the most part, I know not in your family, thank God for you. There are some examples that are different to us. But generally, the way it's set up is that moms are doing it all. They're doing it all for their kids. They're doing it all for themselves. They're doing it all for their husbands. And then now they must also be like, well done, honey. You did that excellently, you know, like, and we're walking on eggshells because God forbid we, you know, step on a landmine and blow up the man's ego. So I think that it's about recognizing this is what dads need, but dads need, actually the culture needs to change. Like you said, the media needs to change. Other dads, other men need to change around, and women who aren't the mother can also be those people. I mean, I think mothers would say yes, and my mother-in-law loves to tell my husband how what a great daddy is. You know, doesn't count.
I get that all the time. But, just a couple of I get, so definitely I can from like we don't want the one thing we shouldn't be doing is adding more labor to the list of, you know, the laundry list of items that moms have already. The one problem with that is that I think in most maybe I'm making a generalized statement here. I know in my experience, the one person that I want to get praise from is my wife more than anything. Like that's the most meaningful. So that's something to keep in mind and consider. But I 100% agree with you that society in general, when you see that Facebook post or the Instagram post of a famous actor dad walking his kid down the road and people are like, oh, look at what a great dad he is. Be the person who adds it in, and maybe don't be the person who has the negative comment. I think that's the other problem, is that what ends up happening is that dads will scroll through those comments and you'll see someone saying, oh, he's not a real man for walking his child. And then the next comment will also be, oh, why do dads get praised for doing things moms do? So it can become very messy and negative. I think if we try and keep it positive, I think that is such a great way forward. And then think about the fragile nature of fatherhood. I might just steal that and call that that's the title of my book, The Fragile Embryo of Fatherhood. I'm taking that from you, Carly.
You can have it, co-create. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I think you've nailed it. I think it's about putting these messages across, getting these images across. For me, the image of like a man with a baby on his chest, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think there's a single person who would want to neg that. Like, what have you got? What part of you would ever see a man with a baby on his chest in a position that we all know? I think primarily we know that feeling of what it feels like to have a baby on your chest, skin to skin. How in anyone's mind could that be negative? You know? Or like, Have you seen these beautiful videos of when, you know, children having tantrums and dad's just sitting there like honoring, making on his face, breathing with him? I mean, that is that is delivering the message without needing any clarification. We don't need to describe anything beyond that. You just, there it is, the image of that dad doing that thing. There was recently, I don't know if you saw this thing on Instagram, where there was like a post where they said, I'm 4 years old, I broke a glass, and the first thing my dad said was, thank you for telling me, I'm glad no one got hurt, or something like that. And it's like,
yeah.
You know, just those simple things of just putting the word dad in a post about parenting instead of the word mom, you know, you can't criticize that. You can't pull that down, you know?
And I think that's how we build the culture, is exactly those moments. And it is just a collection of moments that's fighting against the tide of tradition and history. But every one of us has a part to play, even if it just is, actually, I've got nothing good to say about fathers. Let me just not say anything for a time being. I understand that so many people have such a bad experience of fathers. And so I wouldn't expect them to want to say something positive. I don't think it's very fair. But maybe leave it to those of us who are trying to change the narrative, to try and change the perspective and change the culture. Let us do that work. And hopefully someone else won't have to go through the experience that you went through.
Okay. Well, on that note, I think we've solved the world's problems today, so we're good.
I have to go pick up my children now, speaking of being a good dad.
Thank you for being such a good dad. You're an amazing dad. Well done. Keep showing up. I'm serious. Keep showing up exactly as you are. Keep shouting from the rooftops loudly. And let's make dads want to flex their dadhood. That is all I want from dads. I just want dads to be like, look at what a good dad I am.
Yeah. Flaunt it. I would love that. Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. And we need more of these. These conversations on platforms like this is so important. So thank you so much for making the space available for dads to talk about dad stuff.
Yes. Okay. See you on the gram. And
we'll see you on the gram.
Maybe talk again.
Yeah, we'll chat soon. Thank you so much. We'll chat soon. Yes.
Thank you so much for listening to On the Couch with Carly. If something in this episode resonated with you or made you feel less alone, that means the world to me. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and now in video format on YouTube. For exclusive content and resources, visit our website at onthecouchwithcarly.com. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please consider leaving a rating or review. It really does help others discover our safe space for authentic conversation. Until next time, please take good care of yourself. I can't wait to be back on the couch with you again.